Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 25th day of July 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute. Along the way, we'll talk with Ben Pruce out at the Anderson's Everly, Iowa facility, and check in with Mark Schloy and Lance Honig, both from USDA NAS. They've begun the process as of today for collecting data on the August crop production report figures. That all comes up during the first half hour of the program. In the second half hour, if you listen to our home radio station on AM 580, Commodity Week comes up. Our special guest today, Ray Jenkins. He's from Cargill in Eddyville, Iowa. If you need to, you can always hear it online at willag.org or on many of these radio stations Saturday morning. And it's all part of the service that comes to you from Illinois Public Media and willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. On this Friday afternoon, September wheat at $5.38, up 9 1/4. December at $5.59 3/4, 9.5 cents higher. Hard red winter at $6.31 1/4, up 10 3/4. From the corn pit, September contract at $3.63, a penny and a half higher. December corn, $3.71 3/4. Up 2 1/4 in the March at $3.83 1/4. March corn finished up 2 cents for the day. May futures at $3.91, up a penny and a half. And December of next year at $4.11 3/4, 3/4 of a cent higher. Better pick up the July as well, $3.98 1/4. It was up 1 1/4 cents for the afternoon. August soybeans now $12.12 1/4, up 4 3/4. September at $11.13 3/4, up 2 1/4. November beans were off a penny and a quarter, or down for the day at $10.83 1/2. And January futures at $10.90 1/4, 1 1/4 lower. March futures off the same penny and a quarter at $10.96 1/4. And the July of next year at $11.08 1/4, down 1 1/4 cents for the afternoon. August bean meal at $3.98, up $2.70. Bean oil at $36.09, 15 cents lower for the day. Live cattle up $2.55. Feeders up 92.5. And lean hogs for the day, 42.5 cents higher. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Let's take a look at the outside markets at this time. September futures are trading $101.98 a barrel for the crude oil. That's 9 cents lower. RBOB gasoline in the August contract up 2 8/10 cents to $2.86 1/2. And ethanol futures at $2.14 1/2, 3 8/10 cents higher. The spread between those two is 72 cents wide. That tells you that the marketplace is accepting ethanol very easily. Anything above about 20 cents in the spread makes sure that ethanol goes into the market without any fear of some losses on either end. It is just about unchanged for the day. Natural gas at $3.78, that's 6 7/10 lower. Diesel fuel for the day trading at $2.91 3/10, up 4 2/10. And gold futures at $1,303.30 an ounce, $12.50 on their settlement price, higher on the afternoon. U.S. dollar at 81.03. That's up 0.15 on the 20-minute delay for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. On this Friday afternoon, showers are likely, possibly a thunderstorm all before 5 in the evening, then a slight chance of showers, some thunderstorms after 5. Mostly cloudy in the area, 76 degrees the high this afternoon. Calm winds out of the south at 5 miles an hour. They could gust to 18. Chance of precipitation in the area set at 70%. Tonight, a 40% 10% chance of rainfall, mainly after 8, mostly cloudy and a low of 67, south winds at 6 to 11. And then tomorrow, that 40% chance of rainfall continues right through the 2 o'clock hour, partly sunny and a high of 89 degrees. Saturday night, showers and thunderstorms are likely after 8 in the evening, mostly cloudy and a low of 70 degrees. And on Sunday, more showers and thunderstorms, all before 8 in the morning, partly sunny otherwise.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is the closing market report for a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the numbers in Chicago as they settled up on a Friday afternoon, Mike Zuzlow, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He is in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's see. What can we talk about this week? Usually we talk at this time of year about the corn crop getting better. This year, at least, we do. And it seems like it continues to get better. The weather seems not to be too bad. And there are some areas that are drying out. The marketplace has been going lower. What can you tell me about it?
I think the biggest thing to talk about probably is that even though the weather did turn a little bit more price negative at midday on the updated models, Todd, the wheat short covering did accelerate, compensated for it, and helped to keep the grains positive on the close. One of the first weeks we've seen where the wheat's been able to do any good for the row crops. And I think, you know, weather certainly, as I told clients last week and I started talking about corn basis and how to lock in basis first in corn before the futures market or right around when the futures market bottoms, the three things to look at is WW1, wheat, weather, and inflation. And we had two of those three this week come into play, weather and the wheat. And, you know, just some numbers to give you an idea of where we're at right now and how bad this bleeding has been in the wheat market, which has led the corn lower. This is only the third day that we've been able to close above the 10-day moving average in September wheat since May 8th. This is the second consecutive weekly close higher in wheat on a weekly chart that we haven't seen that since April. So we're talking about doing something that hasn't been done for 3 to 5 months when it comes right down to it. So there are some glimmers of hope when it comes to the demand side. Weekly export sales, very, very strong. Weather is going maybe from perfect to near perfect to by the end of the week, a little bit concerning west of the Mississippi. Just looked up the European 10-day precip totals. Omaha is looking at 0.3 inches of rain the next 10 days after this current system goes through. Indianapolis is looking at 2.5 inches. So you can kind of start to see a split in the Corn Belt as far as precipitation. And so I think these are the things that are starting to mature. I think corn would have done a lot better and not been down 8 cents in September and almost 7 cents in December on the week, and followed wheat a little bit better had it not been for the DDG issue coming out of China just yesterday.
Let's talk about that more in a moment, but stay with wheat for me at this time. Do you suppose, and I know it'll take a while to confirm this, but that we might be putting a harvest low in the wheat market?
I think that's highly likely because this was the first week that we were able to see fundamentals and technicals come together. We started to see news out of Europe that quality wheat was having difficulty being found finally. It's been a rapid pace of export, Todd, around the world. We just haven't gotten any. You and I have talked about that. I think probably the biggest sleeper factors that are starting to come into the market and will become big issues in the next 10 to 15 days that will determine probably the upside potential in wheat is the Indian monsoon. We've hit July 24th. That's their kind of drop-dead date for getting crops in the ground and having them have a very good likelihood of making max yield. We're about 16% in terms of planted area behind in rice, 32% behind in corn, 17% behind in oil seeds. Specifically, soybean planting is about 14% behind in area compared with last year as of July 24th. The second thing is Australia. That's getting a little bit more press, a little bit drier in some key wheat-growing areas there. So what has been very bearish for the trade in the northern hemisphere, El Nino, is starting to pick up a little bit more positive sentiment in some of those key southern hemisphere areas because of the same effect of El Nino.
Why is it, do you suppose, and you mentioned this, that China has gone to the United States Department of Agriculture and said, can you please give us a GMO certification on the DDG? We don't want, and they don't want a couple of Syngenta GMOs. I think it's Duracate and Viptura. But they have taken a lot of DDGs over the past year, of course, and there'd be some there, too.
They have an oversupply of hogs. I mean, I think that's the simple answer. They have an oversupply of hogs. They've been exporting meal to our normal Asian customers, still taking our DDGs. That's not working. Their corn prices made yet another new record high this week, is my understanding off of one of the websites I follow. I haven't been able to confirm that, though, but that's what I'm seeing right now. I think the simple answer is they have over-accelerated their production of hogs. Their consumption has also fallen because of these meat food scandals, and we've got a brand new one that went from China to Japan to Hong Kong when it came to the Yum Brands and the McDonald's flare-up here this week. That's still ongoing. I think that's the simple answer, Todd, is they're trying to get and unload some of their feed grain and slow down their imports because they got to get a handle on their hog prices. Now, hog oversupply. Yeah.
Does that mean they're trying to control the supply of the input? So they've got a very high price for corn. They're trying to control the inputs of or the DDGs and constrain feed so that folks would stop continuing to push hogs through the marketplace?
I think that's exactly right, and I think that goes back to they have gone through this boom-bust cycle, and this is very well known and very well documented, even in this country in the 70s and 80s, the boom-bust cycle of livestock, and they're still working out some of the issues that we had to deal with 20 to 30 years ago, and I recognize I'm oversimplifying it, but for time constraints, I think that's probably your biggest issue right now is they do not want high food inflation because they want to continue to expand their economy to meet that 7.5% GDP goal. Right now, they don't have a fear of that because hog prices and pork prices have been dropping. In fact, the June CPI came out this past week. One of the biggest reasons why it was flatter than the trade was expecting was because pork was lower. Poultry was higher, pork was lower. Pork can sometimes make up 25 to 30% of the overall CPI. For the food especially, and even the overall CPI, it can really affect dramatically. So they don't have to worry as much about food inflation, so they're able to try and tweak their hog industry at this point. And unfortunately for us, I'm guessing there's some politics behind this and some trade issues behind this. It's coming back in the form of agriculture as maybe a little bit of a trade weapon as well.
And one final question. You mentioned basis, and you were talking to your clientele about using that at this point. Let me see if I've got this right. So you're saying that because the futures markets have been moving lower, the basis has been following it, so it might be a little narrower at this point or closer to the same price, not the same price, but closer to the same price than it might be if we bottom the futures markets and begin to move upward and basis would deteriorate or widen as we get closer to harvest. So you want them to be able to lock in that basis today and then something else later. Is that what
I'm following? Yeah, as soon as we get that, exactly right. As soon as we get the commodity index charts to show a bull buy signal on the technicals, that's where we want to lock in the basis with the idea that, as you say, if the futures start to rally, the end users and the commercials will compensate for that by widening the basis. I think that's going to be fairly easy to do this year because of the rail car tightness and what we talked about on Commodity Week either last week or a couple weeks ago with Brian Basting. There are some issues out there that we have to be aware of early on that there's going to be some logistical problems potentially down the line that will make our basis wider than what we're expecting. So be on guard for that. I think the key, though, when you do this type of strategy, Todd, is that you have to give yourself a date that you want to have that futures locked in. And so I've been talking to clients about that as well. What date do we not want to leave the basis or have the basis locked in and not leave the futures open? There's a drop-dead date. We need to get that futures locked in. So, by the way, there was a big cattle on feed report, and the biannual numbers came out pretty much on track with what the trade was thinking. The monthly cattle on feed report, the placements were a little bit lower because ranchers did hold back a little bit more on better pasture. So June placements were only 94%. The trade expectations on the news wires was just under 97%.
Ooh, that and the DDG thing combined could be a problem up front.
Well, it could be, and this is where it goes back to the wheat market. You know, corn needs a friend. We all know that. It either needs the weather friend out of the soybeans, or it needs a wheat friend out of a technical bottom.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas.
The European Union has advised the United States to take steps to inform Congress and U.S. non-governmental organizations of details involved in the transatlantic trade and investment negotiations. The EU is responding to complaints about access to TTIP negotiating texts. Meanwhile, yesterday, Acting U.S. Trade Representative Wendy Cutler said progress on the TPP agreement being conducted among 12 Pacific Rim countries is gaining momentum. A major sticking point between the two countries remains Japan's desire to provide its sensitive agricultural products, beef and pork, dairy, wheat, sugar, and rice, with as much protection as possible for as long as possible. McDonald's holding company Japan Limited today says it has decided to stop selling all chicken products produced in China after reports earlier this week that a Chinese food supplier may have shipped expired meat. McDonald's restaurants in Hong Kong have also taken chicken nuggets and chicken fillet burgers off its menu. A new study from the University of California and NASA says that groundwater losses from the Colorado River Basin appear massive enough to challenge long-term water supplies for the seven states and parts of Mexico that it serves. Since 2004, researchers said the Colorado River Basin, the largest in the Southwest, has lost 53 million acre-feet, or 17 trillion gallons of water. That's enough to supply more than 50 million households for a year. Researchers used monthly gravity data to measure changes in water mass in the basin from December of 2004 to November of last year and used that data to track groundwater depletion. The White House Rural Council has announced plans for a $10 billion investment fund that will give pension funds and large investors the opportunity to invest in agricultural projects. Those include wastewater systems, energy projects, and infrastructure development in rural America. The fund is to be called the Rural Infrastructure Opportunity Fund, backed by CoBank, a member of the Farm Credit System. CoBank will anchor the $10 billion commitment in the hopes of gaining the support of other lenders and investors. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Now up next, USDA has begun collecting data for its August crop production report. I'll have more on how the agency goes about acquiring that data from corn and soybean farmers. The United States Department of Agriculture is now in the process of gathering the data for its August crop production report. I talked to Illinois State Statistician Mark Schleusner on Friday about the surveys.
Today, July 25th, is when we begin interviewing producers about what they think their yields are going to be for row crops and also for wheat. And on the same day, we'll be asking a different set of producers for permission to go into their fields and lay out samples to get crop measurements in the field.
In the state of Illinois, how many surveys of each type will you do?
For the corn field samples, we're going to do a total of about 280, but we do half of them this month in August, about 140. And then we'll do all of them next month in September. For soybeans, I believe it's 230, but again, we're doing half of them now, so 115 in August and 230 in September. And for the paper questionnaire that we mail to people and for the follow-up phone calls that we make, That's about 1,000. It's 900 or 1,000 producers all around the state of Illinois.
These are confidential phone calls?
Yes. Every time we do a project, the data reported by producers is confidential by law. We are not allowed to give it to anyone. We are interested in tabulating and summarizing and analyzing to produce, in this case, state totals for acreage yield and production on row crops and also for wheat. One thing I'd like to mention, our phone calls are coming from St. Louis. So your caller ID may show a 314 area code, and that's the people that are in our calling center in St. Louis. So if you don't return one of our paper questionnaires in the business reply envelope, then someone will be calling you.
And the phone calls begin when?
I think we're starting today. I hope we give people a chance to reply via mail, and I know that some of the mail-out date was usually something like Monday this past week. So there's been a chance, I think, for people to receive a question in the mail, fill it out, and send it back.
All of these things are confidential. And then the other important note I suppose producers would like to know, do you go back to the same places and ask the same people? Is it about repetition as we go through August, September, October, and the crop production cycle for the reports?
That's exactly right, Todd. We've got a series of four crop production reports coming up, and it's important to us to go back to the same fields, and starting with August, then September, October, until harvest. And it's also important to us to go back to the same producers with our mailed questionnaires. For instance, if you were to look at a double crop soybean field now, it could be quite short and look kind of scraggly and not so much. But if we get some good rains over the next few weeks in August, that can really make a difference. And that field could turn from a scraggly looking poor field into a pretty good field.
That's Illinois State Statistician Mark Schleusner. Lance Honig is the chief of the crops branch for USDA NASH in Washington, D.C. I asked him to explain a bit more about the survey process nationwide.
One is a farmer-based reporting survey. We call it our Ag Yield Survey. We contact farmers across the country and ask them simply to tell us, what do you expect your yields to be? How many acres do you expect to harvest for the various crops? But in addition to that, at least for the corn, soybeans, cotton, and winter wheat, we also have a field-based survey where we actually send trained enumerators into selected fields across the country for those crops, where they can actually take counts and measurements. They'll actually count stalks, count ears, make various counts like that. And as the crop continues to mature throughout the season, eventually they'll be able to actually harvest portions of that crop so that we can send that off to our laboratory in St. Louis for further yield analysis.
That, of course, is Lance Honig, the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS, based in Washington, D.C. The agency will begin collection of data for its August crop production report today, Friday, August the 25th. Well, now that I think about it, they probably begin today, July the 25th. On the phone line with us, speaking of Friday afternoon, is Ben Pruce. He's at the Andersons out of their Everly, Iowa facility. Thanks for being with us to talk about the cash grain market. When the enumerators call the farmers in your area, Ben, are they going to find big corn yields?
I think so. You know, there's been a lot of speculation about, is this going to be, in our neck of the woods, one of the best yielding years we've had. We're not quite convinced of that today, but we're going to be top three for sure. We have an excellent crop right now.
I'm really short of time, so your soybean yields at this point, they look okay?
Yes, yeah. Honestly, everything except for a little volunteer corn, our soybeans look great. You know, I'd say corn and beans, just in our neck of the woods, because of timing, I think we're a little bit behind, but nothing to be concerned about.
Thanks so much, Ben.
Thank you.
Ben Pruce from the Andersons.
Support for this market report comes from Country Financial, providing generations of Central Illinois farmers with crop hail insurance programs for individual producers, immediate family member, or tenant-landlord relationships. More information is available from your local Country Financial representative or at country-crop.com.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Hot Fudge Sunday Day.
It's also St. Christopher Day, patron of fruit dealers, gardeners, and travelers. On this day in agricultural history in 1871, Seth Wheeler of Albany, New York, was issued a patent for perforated wrapping paper. The patent cut the cost of cutting, counting, and bundling stacks of pre-cut sheets. In 1872, it was reported to have rained black worms in Bucharest, Romania. In 1874, Sergei Lebedev was born. Lebedev was a Russian chemist who developed a method to produce synthetic rubber on a commercial scale, which used potatoes and limestone as raw materials. By the 1940s, the Soviet Union had the largest synthetic rubber industry in the world, producing more than 50,000 tons a year. In 1943, Charles McIntosh died, a Scottish chemist and inventor. He was best known for his method of waterproofing cloth. In 1948, bread rationing ended in Britain. In 1993, Vincent Schaefer died, a U.S. research chemist. He invented cloud seeding with dry ice to cause rain or snow. On November 13th of 1946, he flew over Mount Greylock in Massachusetts, where he seeded clouds with pellets of solid carbon dioxide to produce the first snowstorm initiated by man. And in 1965, the first U.S. surgical operation to correct a sperm block on a bull was performed. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This agricultural program is a production of Illinois Public Media. Up next, Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute with the weather forecast.
This past week in Illinois was 5 degrees below average, with very little rainfall except in the far southeast. The statewide average temperature for July so far is 70.6 degrees, which is 5 degrees below average. The statewide average rainfall is 3 inches, and that's about average for this point in July. The largest monthly rainfall totals were in the eastern half of the state, which are 1 to 2 inches above average. Meanwhile, there are several dry areas in the western half of the state, especially between St. Louis and Springfield and between Peoria and the Quad Cities, which are about 1 to 2 inches below average. The National Weather Service forecast for this weekend and next week indicates a brief warm-up on Saturday and Sunday with rain possible, and then a return to cooler weather in the upcoming week. Highs on Saturday will range from the upper 80s in the north to the low 90s in central and southern Illinois. As the cold front works its way across the state on Sunday, it will be cooler and less humid on the far northern part of the state, while still warm and humid in central and southern Illinois. Rainfall totals over the weekend will likely be an inch or less. Monday through Thursday will be cool and dry across the state with highs in the 70s in northern Illinois and in the low 80s in central and southern Illinois. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks, of course, to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute for his weekly update of the weather forecast for the growing regions in the state of Illinois. Now, here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago on the weekly trade. Friday to Friday closes with the high and the low for the week. September corn, a high this week at $3.69. It traded to a low of $3.56.5. The settlement price at $3.63 for September corn. The lead option settled 8.25 cents lower. December contract, $3.71.75 settlement price. The harvest month down 6.75 cents for the week. August soybeans, $12.32.75 for the high. The low at $11.66. August settled 12.12 1/4 in the bean pit, 35.5 cents higher. November at 10.83 1/2, a penny and 3/4 lower. August bean meal at $3.98, up $17.70, and August bean oil at $36.09, that's down 48 cents. September soft red winter wheat at $5.38, up 5.75, and next year's harvest month, July of 2015, at $6.08 1/4 in the soft red, up 3.25 cents. October live cattle at $159.80 on the week, finished $5.47.5 higher. August feeders at $218.25 were up $6.60, and October lean hogs finished at $107.27.5 with a $6.27.5 loss for the day. And that's a look at the numbers from the CME Group in Chicago. Remember, you can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.